Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Oh, yeah, it's me.
And Brian Brushwood.
Oh, yeah, I do the best impression of Justin Robert Young. Oh, this is Brian doing an impression of me. Oh, I'm Brian doing an impression.
Slowly the impression degrades into just like...
it's Bill Cosby. Gentlemen, we have an actual email from a listener. Somebody listened to us.
Yay! I always suspected. You guys didn't believe.
I know. I mean, I still think it's Bryce writing this because it's coming from his email account.
You know what? Maybe it is. Let's not take this away from him, okay? I want more of these.
I was reading, listening to the Marvel Comics, The Untold Story, and they talk about how like one of the comics was so unpopular, like they never really got any letters, so they would like make up letters to it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure this is not made up. 62% sure it's not made up.
Good deal.
This is from Shannon. Well, all right, it's a girl. We know it's made up. Okay, never mind. No girl would listen to us. Hi, all! Exclamation point. You probably don't remember me, but I sent a Weird Tank email earlier this year asking you for some advice. At the time, I just started a WordPress blog to write movie reviews. From both your responses to my particular email and to other people who've written to you, I've made a little progress. By putting myself and my work out there, I've made some great connections. My reviews have been published in the local newspaper. From here, I was offered the opportunity to write in an artist profile for a music festival. After that, everything has streamrolled, and I've recently been hired as a freelance writer for the company that runs multiple papers around the area. While they can't hire me as a full-time journalist, they hope to keep me on while I start my journalism degree next year and have offered me much advice and help. I very much appreciate the fact that you don't sugarcoat things. Andrew?
That's a different podcast, sugarcoated things, where it's like, everything's great. No, you're working real hard. You're doing good.
So good.
Andrew, I think it was you in particular that said there were lots of people out there doing just as I'm trying to do. That's what I do is break dreams. The honesty that it's not as easy as 1, 2, 3 to get to where you want is something that many people need to hear. One particular piece of advice from Brian is stuck in my mind and to my computer screen since that After Things episode. The biggest thing is going from nothing to something because most people don't even make that jump. I made that jump. While in my mind, I have my ideal end goal, I'm taking any little side roads I can that will eventually get to my destination. Thank you very much for all the advice and your willingness to share your personal experience with your listeners, not to mention the years of entertainment. Best wishes, Shannon.
That's wonderful.
Her website's just anotherfangirl.com.
That's great. By the way, probably a more eloquently stated version of that going from nothing to something sentiment is in Facebook, famously, they have a sign up that says done is better than perfect, right? Where it's like, don't get caught up in the idea of making it right and sitting still up here, you know, get it done and get it out to the world. Congratulations, Shannon. That is really inspiring to hear.
And, you know, we try to be straightforward, and we know that we're just trying to take kind of stabs in the dark or guesses and just trying to figure things out, you know, how to do things too. And we don't want to be discouraging. We want to be realistic. We want to make sure that we just sort of, you know, help people appreciate these things are hard. You know, we do them because we think we want an easier way, but sometimes this path is much more difficult than the one we're on, and you've got to make that. But it sounds like you just persevered. And in given how difficult journalism right now, the fact that you're in this position you already are in and you're going to be going into J school with this, that's wonderful. Very, very happy to hear that.
Yeah, the biggest problem with writing is just realizing how slow that process is and how much you learn each time you put something out there into the world. And with journalism, that cycle is very, very accelerated if you keep yourself on it. And so I think just looking at the recent movies that you have on there, I think you're keeping yourself to a very rigid schedule, and I think that's awesome. You are doing a great job.
success often happens, you know, most all the time, long after everybody else would give up. And if you just got to keep, you know, when nobody's watching, when nobody's paying attention, if you keep doing it, because you don't know, it's an odds game. And, you know, if you're trying to, you know, hit something that one chance out of 1,000, then you got to do it. I know for me, when I wanted to get my own TV show, I told myself, it's not a matter of just getting a production company that wants to do a pilot or in a network that wants to do a pilot. I got to keep going up to bat over and over and over and over again, because I saw a lot of people that wanted to do that. They got close and then they got discouraged. And I'm like, no, get close means just keep doing it and being smarter about it and not just go like, well, that's fake. That's came to the end of the road. The bridge is out. I guess I'm done. And that a lot of people just want an excuse to give up.
Well, and we've talked about this before. It's like there has to be, for you to succeed at virtually anything and have it matter, there has to be a mountain of garbage you have to eat. And it's like there's nobody you respect. And I could swear we've had this exact conversation. But like I as a 21-year-old kid, was like, okay, picture somebody who you really respect, Todd Robbins, tell her, you know, any magician or whatever, and picture asking them the question, hey, was there ever like a really disastrous show that you had? And it's like, I couldn't imagine anybody who I respected who didn't have way epic tales of massive, massive failure and frustration and difficulty. And as a result, I realized, oh, wait, that's part and parcel. That's the price to achieve anything, is that you have to sign up to eat a mountain of garbage. And I think we've talked about the on The Wire, the parables of the bowls of poop that they talk about. So at any rate, you know, the whole double your failure rate to double your success rate thing.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, let's jump tracks here. We had Black Friday tomorrow. Cyber Monday.
ASL.
Wait, are you turned on? What's going on?
On. It's Cyber Monday, right?
Oh, let's Cyber go. Monday. Got it.
That's Cybering Monday.
all the chat rooms, ASL-ing.
Dude. Any observations or thoughts?
Yeah. Oh, so I started a thread. I just gave a random flood on Twitter, kind of asking, you know, hey, what is Black Friday mean to you? And of course the obvious answer is, you know, it's crass consumerism or whatever, but I mean, and that's true. I'm not going to deny that, you know, the image that we have of people kicking down doors, stampeding over each other to get a Transformers toy at 20% off or whatever. It's ridiculous. And it's crass consumerism, but, and keep in mind, this comes from somebody who's in this world. So that's certainly colors why I feel this way. It's also a time that independent creators, like, it's astonishing how much of all the business we're going to do all year on the online store happens in exactly these 4 days, you know, Friday to Monday. Have you guys seen what the Cards Against Humanity folks are doing?
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah.
If you go to holidayhole.com, they're basically telling people to pay us money to throw it into a hole and we'll just keep on doing it. It's currently, well, I guess as we're recording on Sunday, there's only 2 hours and 47 cents, but they have all these graphs and everything showing exactly how much money has been thrown down the hole. But my favorite part was, by the way, that's a big hole. They have nothing. They've accomplished an astonishing amount of hole digging.
Yeah, just clarify, they're not going to throw the money. They're just using the money to pay for digging a hole. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you tune into the live stream, you're watching an actual, you know, caterpillar dig a hole and all that stuff. The best part is in the FAQ. If you scroll on down, one of the FAQs is, why aren't you giving this to charity? And then the response is, it's your money. Why aren't you giving it to charity? which I thought was astonishing. So I love this as performance art, but I wanted to kind of see, as much as you feel comfortable talking about, Justin, how big of a deal this weekend has been, because, you know, what we do is the podcast. What we do is we talk and hopefully entertain and try to be insightful. But the way, one of the significant ways we get paid is on the back end for events like these. How's everything gone on your end?
Wait, How do you bring it up and then not show me yours before you ask to see mine?
The only benchmark I have is because Scam Stuff launched in with the Kickstarter in 2012, so it's not a real holiday season. Then 2013, we did okay. Actually, I don't know. Last year was the first big year we had. So my question was like, well, are we going to hit last year? And we were under on the first 2 days, but we've been slightly over on Friday and Saturday. And then today it's still to be determined. But but it's tough because on the one hand we have, I don't want to say it's a weaker slate. It's a less novel slate of products that we have this year because many of them are the same things as last year or a modest update or a attempt on the same idea. Like the Outlaws, I will say the Outlaws custom cards are better in my opinion than the Arcana cards. But it's a familiar idea. So, I can understand why people might not be as interested on there. So it looks like this year is pretty much like last year, and I can't tell how much of that is the novelty wearing off. I can't tell how much of that is, the product line looking for something, different. But on the flip side also, the overall presence is bigger this year than it was last year as well.
So for you, because I guess and I'll go through, everything on the contender store. What were your expectations going into it?
I don't even know because this is one of the weird times of year when it's like you work really hard to build up a good reputation, among your fans and a good presence. And you want to mix the message we have tried to put out to the world is, hey, world, you have to buy gifts. These are pretty novel gifts. We're pretty proud of all of them. All of them are discounted. So, our take is, the smallest it's going to be all year long. Hopefully that's engaging to you and makes you want to jump in and do it. So when we did well last year, I didn't know how much of that was like, do we have a genuinely good product idea? Is this just the echoes of having a TV show and my presence being at an all-time peak? We just didn't know. So going into this year, it was especially weird because it's like, well, I suspect we're reaching more people than we did last year. I suspect, and so it's weird, Justin. Like, we're basically full-time gamblers now. Like, I have to think of an idea and work it out with everyone on the team, and we have to commit tens of thousands of dollars to buy stuff and have it assembled and stuff, all for the weird, of thinking like, well, there's that one weekend when everybody really likes to participate in buying stuff. And it, on the one hand, it's terrifying and crazy, but on the other hand, it's exciting and wonderful. And I don't know, it feels like being an independent privateer. It feels like we're crewing on the Firefly,
Well, let me frame it this way. If you were below last year's, how would that have made you feel? And it looks like now you're probably going to either be at the same level or marginally above or marginally below. But if you were, let's say, a few percentage points below last year, how would that have made you feel?
If we were significantly below last year, I think that would be, and already even seeing a stagnation, a leveling out has made me aware, oh, wait, like I didn't think about it as gambling. Like last year, we sold out of the Arcana artifacts so fast that all I could think about is how many sales we were missing out on because I had underprepared for this.
Yeah.
So this year I was like, it's not going to happen again. We prepared, we bought appropriate amounts of everything. I feel like the prices were really good for this weekend, but now, even just hitting the same numbers as last year, it has me very aware of like, oh no, wait, that's really tens of thousands of dollars that I spent with the expectation of being able to sell this. And it's a bit horrifying. Like the gambling aspect. Hey, did you know that sometimes people lose money when they try to be entrepreneurs, Justin?
Yeah. No, I'm aware.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying. It's exciting and wonderful, but also very, very terrifying.
So, like, that's what you came away with was just this idea that, you know, the real skill of what you were doing lied in picking what you were going to sell and buying it in the right prices.
Yeah, I don't even know so much about that, though. Because there's so many.
That's really what gambling is. Gambling is you know, or professional gamblers is the science of finding the vulnerabilities and putting the right amount of money on the right amount of things and hedging when you have enough value that you can still hedge around and make sure that you assure that you are winning X amount, right? Or it is highly likely that you are going to win something as opposed to nothing. Like it's all that min-maxing. That's the real art of it, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I wish it's an unusual aspect, and I'd be interested to loop in Andrew on this part. Like, ostensibly, our job is not to be entrepreneurs. Ostensibly, our job is to provide insightful commentary and talk about Bigfoot and you know, make jokes and entertain people while they're jogging or whatever. And yet, the only way to do that is that we have to be passably good with the at this other aspect of things. It makes me think of in how to fail at everything and still win big, the Scott Adams book that you recommended, Andrew, that I loved. Mm-hmm. He talks about where it's better to be good at two things than great at one of them.
Yeah, I think that certainly there are things that we can do that, like, I mean, I started writing because I wanted to write, not because I it was helpful that we had an audience. I said, oh, okay, here's an audience that might want to buy a product for me, like a book. But I wanted to tell a story. You know, I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
I still periodically will put out a magic trick or something because I'm like, oh, here's a thing that I think would be really cool and I want to put this out there. And it might make me money. Chances are I'll at best break even, you know, these days when I do it because I just sort of put it out there and kind of don't do anything beyond that. But certainly, you know, when you do one thing and you get a lot of, you know, in the attention economy, you have to figure out ways to say, okay, how do I keep participating in that attention economy? You know, I know that, like, I started doing the darker path, and to do the darker path right means I got to shell out a few hundred bucks towards every episode, you know, to do the sound design and stuff. And I did a couple of them. I'm like, all right, if I want to do this right, I need to put a lot more time into doing this. And right now I don't have the time to do that. So I didn't do that. And so that would certainly be a case of, here's this really cool thing I want to do, but I can't make it self-sufficient right now, so I'll put it on the side. But other things lend themselves to that more easily.
Sure, sure.
You know, I think you are in a unique situation, Brian, because by and large, you are, aside from the cards that you are, and I guess the t-shirts, right, that you guys are paying to design.
Right.
You are finding things that you are either customizing or you are finding things that you are reselling, right?
Yes. Yes. For example, like the, I mean, this all sound incredibly well-timed given the fact that they're all on sale at scamstuff.com. Like the Ultimate Lockpick Trainer is a product that we get from Southern Ordnance from Southard, and it's really, really good. And you know, there's that weird game. It's like we want to move a lot of them because we have a lot of them in the warehouse, but you know, we have to make something on it. So we figure out, you know, what feels like the middle ground between being super attractive to where people pull the trigger on it, but then also at least, you know, makes it worth doing.
So I think for you, you are in a situation where you are making more of those kinds of bets. You know, because there are many times a year, if not a dozen or more times a year, that you need to sit down, look at a thing and say, all right, how much do we need of this? How many will we sell? How much room do we have in the warehouse? Yada, yada, yada.
Right.
Like,
by the way, when it comes to the cards, that's very much the case because I was talking to Assad from 52 Cards, the YouTube magic channel, and he was like, hey, man, not for nothing, but why don't you just Kickstarter all that? Then you don't ever have to, you know, if the interest isn't there, then you have no way to fail and whatever. But I realized that the Kickstarter button is a button you can only press so many times because at some point you just become the guy who's continuously waving his hands, shouting out pipe dreams.
I don't know. I think sometimes Kickstarter is a store. Sometimes Kickstarter can be an effective store. Like there was a thing I saw, this cool, it looks cool. It's this Dashbot. Have you seen this?
Mm-mm.
It's like a $49 device, runs Linux, plug it into your car and it will connect to your phone. And it's basically, it can actually do Alexa and all that for your car, right?
Right on.
And it's got this sort of Knight Rider sort of looking thing on that. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool. And I'm like, they're not going to be able to deliver until like July. I'm like, I will probably forget about it by then. And they're probably doing a very realistic date. But I'm like, if this company, if every 6 months they had some cool invention like that, I'd be like, cool.
But even then, that's twice a year. On scam stuff, I think we had 40 releases over the last year.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. But I think Kickstarter is a great way if, you know, it depends. It depends. It certainly depends, I love pop-up books, right? And I thought about like, man, I'd love to make like a magic pop-up book that did something. But like, I know there ain't a global audience for a lot of those, you know?
Right.
But it's also if I wouldn't do a magic product on there, but that'd be something like, well, if I was going to drop like $6,000 or $7,000 on making these things, and maybe I'd go there and do it. And from like an occasional kind of thing.
Well, and we had 40 launches this year, but how many were originals or like big?
Yeah. You know, specific things? I would say like 10 of them. Or 20 of them were probably Illusionist or Theory 11 stuff. They were right. Curated. Like we said, out of your catalog, we really like this thing. Let's share it with our audience.
Big bespoke things like the Arena or the Brew Kit.
Correct. Those originals,
yeah.
You know, are more challenging. And they require us to, at some point, we have to sit down and make a guess. Like how many units do we want? Because it sucks when you say, hey, everyone, buy my thing. And then they, you know, the orders come in and it's like, we don't have enough of the thing. And so you change the title to pre-order to blank ships on whatever.
Yeah. By the way, it's been where we've been at, you know, this whole fall is just kind of like getting the stuff and then having that big weight of like having to get all of it out, you know, as soon as possible. And you know, knowing that every moment that somebody impulse orders something and then doesn't get it erodes that trust just even on the edges, you know?
Yeah. And we have a little bit of wiggle room in that oftentimes in some ways it actually helps to make this a pre-order thing. I guess that's sort of the compromise that we've done. If we're going to go full Kickstarter, then it's like, I have a vision. Here's pictures of the vision. Who's in? Okay, everything's tabulated. Now we're going to buy the thing. And then that is a very, very safe way to do it. But it's not as satisfying in the long term, you know, week after week after week. You know, so many of the releases we've had to do pre-orders where it's like, we've got a thing. They're on their way. They'll ship in 2 weeks. Pre-order pricing is discounted, which, you know, again, it's frustrating because it's like, well, I don't know. I'm discounting the price, but maybe I'm leaving, you know, cash on the table or whatever.
You know, what we found with the Contender, and by the way, this week we're going to do it's already written. In fact, it's somewhere it's up. But we're going to publish our full financials of how many we ordered, how much we paid for it, why we made the mistakes that we made, how we dug ourselves out, what our projections were from our initial meetings and everything, yeah, and how
the answer
hilariously,
all of those is weed.
Geez, I'll tell you what. I only wish we could blame the devil's oregano. It was more of a bunch of the liberal arts majors trying to run a business. But all that being said, what really saved our bacon ultimately were these little 10 card expansions that we started to do during the debates, and then we did one on election night. The big kicker was that we were able to say, hey, we're gonna write all this tonight. We're gonna rush, design it. We're going to proofread it. We're going to get it out to the printer ASAP, and we're going to have this back. So it's like, because there was that idea that we were creating it all, like as people were being able to buy it, A, we were able to give ourselves a little bit of a projection on how much we would order. Although based on the price breaks, it really wasn't that big of a deal. And ultimately, we were able to just kind of write in the reason why they weren't going to get it tomorrow, you know, because these were just going to the printer. How could we possibly know what the best quotes from the debate are 24 hours beforehand when we're first letting you guys know that this will be available? So we were able to hide behind that. Now, you know, we're in a situation where we've had a good Black Friday through today. We'll see what happens tomorrow, but we're gonna you know have a situation where now they're coming from China, and we're gonna have to just keep getting them out and get them in people's hands and figuring that out as we go, which is a little bit, you know, it kind of brings a little anxiety to me, but ultimately, at least, you know, we have an idea of. But we have a relationship with our audience, which is, I think, what you're, you know, worrying about in terms of like, hey, do we kickstart this? Do we pre-sell it? You know, what do people feel best about in terms of parting with their money?
Right. So this is a weird time of year for you because you have a product that you originally started pitching on Kickstarter a year and change ago, right? And so you have the people who bought it, and then the problem is once everybody buys the Contender, they can't buy it again, except for right now. Right now is a magic time where all of a sudden it's like, hey, do you like the Contender? You can give the Contender to other people because we all know you need to buy gifts to give to other people. I would imagine that reaching those same fans that, you know, that are the hardcore, the same people that have made the expansion pack so popular is the way to go. Is it going well in that regard?
So, all right. So basically there's a couple things that we decided to do. Number one, we decided to say, hey, look, if you know somebody that's on the fence with it, or you want to tip somebody off or you want to get the whole thing for somebody, here is the crazy package deal that has, both of our major expansions, the deck itself and these cool little, enamel lapel, pins that Guts and Glory made.
Mm-hmm.
So that all comes together. That's at a super cheap price. That's $40, right? Then for everybody that's purchased it already, we packaged up all of our mini expansions, including one of them that previously we only sold at cons and that happened to have one misprinted card. So even people that did buy them at the cons are going to have the actual card. We took the card out because the one mini expansion was the television and movie president quotes expansion. And one of the cards, the card that has the famous Independence Day quote of like, we will not vanish into the night.
Oh, that's amazing.
Had like, you know, Strom Thurmond or something on it. So like it was not something that we were going to put into the deck. But now we have everything corrected. So that's going to be in there. And we knew that that was going to be a big seller to everybody that like, because we had pitched everything as limited edition, once they're out. And we held to it. We actually stopped selling them once we were out of what we had ordered. We didn't reorder it because we knew that we were coming up on this. Those have sold really well. So here, let's give you guys a little. Let's open the kimono a little bit. This is our effectively at the point that the first debate happened, we were $17,000 in debt to our manufacturer.
Wait, sorry. Say those words again.
At the point that, and listen, we break down all this. We made $142,000 on Kickstarter. Of course, that's before taxes and declined cards and everything. So once everything actually came to us, it was $120,000. We then immediately went $40,000 into debt. And assuming that if we kept through the presidential season, if we kept 25% of our momentum, that we could sell 20,000 units. This proved to be a gross overestimation of what we would sell throughout the presidential season. We were expecting that, you know, listen, there was a lot of press, obviously, about this race. This turned out to be the biggest, most paid attention to race in the history of all modern democracy. But that was not for us. And so we sold very, very little, you know, up through the point where the debates happened. And so after we sold the rest of the television and movie expansion pack online and they immediately sold out, we're like, well, let's go ahead and do these little debate expansions. In those 3 days, or sorry, those three different debates that each happened about a week and a half away from each other, in that 3 week span, we made roughly $12,000.
Wow.
The first debate, the night of the debate, brought in about $2,000. The second debate brought in a little bit less because it was over a weekend. So we had to do our email blast on a Friday and a Monday as opposed to the day of and the day after. And then the final one was very, very big for us. That was about $2,300 on the first day. And then we had like about $1,000 day the day after. Compare that to what has happened in the last 4 days, where we have made $5,000. We had about a $3,000 Wednesday when we sent out our email, and then like 600, 800, 500, 800 was on Black Friday.
So does this bring you into profitability territory? Because
it does, Brian.
Okay, good. Well, and so does that loosen up your feelings as far as like, well, let's go ahead and keep the price low. Let's just move as many units as we can because we're finally into the gravy phase. Or is it still because all the accounting we've done on the scam stuff side is like every single product has a known expense per unit that that we work with. And so there's kind of this hard deck that below this number we're actively losing money, no matter we've sold, you know, one of them or 500 of them, or whether or not we made our money back or not.
Right now we're selling, you know, we decided to drop the price on the decks to $1,776 for the holidays, which we thought was, you know, both a catchy price, obviously, and a discount from the $29.99 that it is normally. And right now we're doing free shipping with offer code Gobble. You know, I think we're going to keep it at $29.99 once the holidays are over. Cause I do want to preserve that. At some point in a year or so, we might wind up dropping it. But, you know, I don't think that that's on the horizon right now, aside from this being just like a moment when, you know, sales are so frenzied.
Yeah,
that it makes a little bit more sense to do it.
And that's the hard part, is sticking to your guns on the retail price the rest of the year. Like it's for example, we've talked about the book test that I put together. They are expensive to make, but also part of the pricing is that we want it to stay exclusive. We want very few people to have this in their hands. And that means it's got to be at a price that will scare off a lot of folks. So normally all three of them are $11.99. That's $1,199.99. But this is the one time of the year that it's like we're going to drop the price. And that's the hardest thing is to afterwards say it's worth this full amount. I'm going to turn off the money faucet and just, you know, let it be trickle for the rest of the time.
Well, we're in kind of a different situation because unlike, you know, you are running a store full time, right? And so therefore you need it to be stocked. Like, you know, I am running a fruit stand and, you know, or some guy who makes glass bottle art, you know, and you are our Walmart. Like you are doing, I think a far more complicated job than for us. I mean, effectively, and listen, you're going to read it this week. We overcomplicated life, like in a million different ways. And part of it was just us not knowing the lay of the land. Part of it was us being, you know, having our eyes a little bit bigger than our stomach. And also, I mean, listen, at the point that we made the decisions on buying stuff, we were taking calls with like the publisher for Calvin and Hobbes that wanted to stock us around the world. Like we were still doing a lot of press. Like the band was kind of tuning up on the election to a level that, you know, I hadn't remembered seeing before. We had, you know, somebody that was running for president and now is president that was extraordinarily adept at keeping his race in the headlines. So, you know, the decisions that we were making, you know, are things that now when we replicate it going forward, we can easily just say, listen, the hard part was raising $142,000 on Kickstarter. If we just would have understood what we know now about manufacturing, we could have all fulfilled, gave ourselves a little bit of stock to sell, maybe times two a stock to sell, made $30,000 a piece, and then reordered for the holidays and done whatever that was, right?
Right.
Now, we would not have learned our lesson on supporting the game, which I think is probably the more valuable one, because all I've ever heard from anybody in the board game world, the tabletop world, is that games die in a year. People get the game. There's so many games coming out. People get the game. They like the game. They buzz about the game. The game's dead. Anything that survives a year, you know, can become something bigger. But in general, it just doesn't happen. So us realizing that we can keep our fan base alive and excited in a way that even better is profitable to us is very exciting and probably a more valuable lesson. However, we did not necessarily need to go $40,000 into debt to learn it. But, you know, hell, we got to, you know, you got to earn your lump somehow, I guess.
Well, and I mean, that's the big question, right? Is how big of an investment, like which is the greater pain, missing out on, you know, unutilized brand opportunity or being stuck with overbuying on stock or things. I mean, it is a look. I don't blame anybody who just sits all this stuff out and says, you know what? I write books. I don't run a store. You know, like I'm not. I don't mean you exactly, Andrew, but like
I do run a store. I just don't really run it very well.
Well, like, but I'm curious. Did you do anything during Black Friday, Cyber Monday weekend?
No. Nope, I may give away a book tomorrow or something. I just don't.
That's not a fun game for you.
I just don't. Yeah, I don't. I put that there meaning I wasn't actually going to do a sale, and people thought that meant that I wasn't going to go to a sale, which was also true. I mean, for me in my brand, you know, it's the less I look like a guy running a store, the better. You know,
yeah, it's
difficult
hard.
Balance. You know, I'm having kind of a back and forth with the publisher about how I like to give away copies of my books to people who are on my email list because I just want to get people who like my stuff and then figure out that'll build its own momentum and take me where I want to go. You know, but if I was trying to build a really good Magic retail thing and that was my primary goal, I'd do things very differently, very differently. So. I don't know. For me, it was like I'd rather miss out on sales and just, you know, have people see me as just a regular guy who writes books. And
well, and stuff, but, and half, there's half, a value to that. Like the mere fact that you are not, you know, it's all sowing and reaping. It's all building up brand value and then figuring out a way to change some of that brand value into a cash exchange. And for where you're at right now on, you know, in your writing career, makes total sense to me. It's like, no, let all of this cultivate, let all of this.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, like, it's like my goal, like just to go behind the curtain right now. Like I don't talk about a lot of stuff that I'm kind of like why I'm out here or what I've been doing. And part of what I'm doing is, you know, like working on getting stuff developed for film and TV and doing, you know, going through that whole monkey dance and doing that kind of thing. And cause that's my bigger goal is just, you know, if you saw a Jessica Blackwood TV show or something, like, by the way, there's the third Jessica Blackwood book, Blackfall, is available this March. You can pre-order it now on Amazon. It's why I'm not a. It's not why I'm out pimping my stuff, guys. You know? I I look at what the game I'm playing, you know, the kind of the longer game I'm playing. And I think I could be doing a lot smarter things business wise and managing that thing. But I'm lazy too, you know.
You know, like, well, it's my brand to be lazy.
I hear from somebody who talks to Andrew every day. Andrew's involved in a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff.
And also, on the great list of adjectives to ascribe to Andrew Main, lazy is not even available. If you had intended to put lazy on that list, no.
I will do the things I want to do, and the things I go, I won't do. You know, I'll go out of my way really hard to do something I don't want to do.
I think that's a good testament to, you know, finding the right time between, you know, harvesting, you know, the goodwill that you build up. Because like let's say we never got around, you know, we did that on Weird Things. There was a good 6 years of building up brand value and building up our core audience. And it's like, well, are we, you know, is now the time to, I don't want to say take something away, but to start harvesting the benefits of that goodwill by actually having a Patreon and actually making it easy for people to kick a few bucks our way.
Yeah. You know, I go through this and talking like publishers and stuff where it's like, on one hand, they look at like, oh, I've got a really good mailing list. I got this other stuff. And I'm like, yeah. And my relationship there is not, you know, I'm not going to push people really heavy to buy something from me. I'll push to, hey, try this experience or go do this sort of thing. And that can be different. When I was running my magic business and I had my magic books and stuff like that, the relationship was, tell me what new magic books you have. Tell me what I want to buy new stuff. And that's different. Like, that's the position you're in. You built a brand over, like, I'm going to provide you. You provide services and things like that, and you get dollars. Bring those dollars to me. I will give you entertainment in the form of this other stuff. And that's a very genuine, very, very pure. That's why scam stuff exists.
Right, right. Well, and it's a specific, like, in the original days, we would always couch everything like, here's a plus one to your dexterity. Here's a plus one to your charisma. Here's a plus one to your, you know, strength or whatever. Like we are offering you something, you know, like the hat that turns into a weapon, the rogue's revenge. Like, that is a tangible benefit. No matter who you are, when you wear this hat, you'll feel this much more safer.
Yeah. And if I'm on the scam stuff mailing list, I understand that's my relationship, that you're going to say, hey, here's something you might like, I'm selling you. And that's cool. And it's like, that's like with me, like, well, if I have an Andrew Main mailing list and this, it's like, hey, I liked him on TV or I liked him, this sort of stuff. It's not Andrew Main, the store, you know, and I do sell things from time to time and all that. I mean, I'm not, let me be straight. Like, I've got a new thing, whatever, but I don't push it or whatever, because it's like, I think the relationship I have there is more like, hey, tell me more about what you do, you know, and not market to me.
Everything is relative, right? Mm-hmm. For Brian, I've always thought scam stuff is a little bit more, you know, it's Think Geek meets Soldier of Fortune, right?
Yeah.
And in that, like, I am not ever I never get a Think Geek email and I'm like, oh my God, trying to sell me something else? Jesus.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
You know, I'm just like, oh, cool. Look, there's a Tanuki suit condom. Isn't that amazing? Like, I want to buy it.
We did iTrix, and part of what we did in iTrix is we would talk about new magic tricks, because we knew that was content for people. People wanted to go to iTrix.com to see what new magic was, because people were like, I've got money I want to spend on magic. Help me find that. And that was a form of entertainment, a form of content that we were trying to, you know, support, you know. And so it's understanding that. And like, for me, I'm like, I've got people who like me for different reasons. And so I'm hesitant to be like, because I've had like, I'll be like, hey, get a book. And I'd get angry emails like, why are you trying to sell me this? And I've had stuff like, I've given away books and somebody goes through and the link doesn't work. Like, I think this is a scam to get me to buy your book. I'm like, no. And I'm like, using much worse language. I'm like, here's the ebook. I want you to have this. I'm like, yeah, if you like it, I would love for you to write a nice review, but I'm really not trying to give you a broken link. And the link wasn't broken. Couldn't figure out how to word it. If that's my plan to get you to buy things, I'm the dumbest guy on the planet.
It's good to hear you mention that, because that's something that, you know, the entire time I was touring, I would always do a giveaway every single stage show, and I would pass around email list and get people on the email list. Over the years, I think we ended up signing up. I personally entered 30,000 emails into my Brian Brushwood Touring Magician email
list. That's fantastic.
Of those, and, you know, obviously people graduate, they change email addresses, a certain number of bad email addresses or whatever. It's now like around 12,000 emails on there, and yet I never, ever, the last time I used them was, I think, to let everybody know that hacking the system was on Netflix, because I knew this audience, these 12,000 people, they're not interested in hearing about, you know, whatever the latest release at my clever online store is. They're here because they want to see, they want to know what Brian the Entertainer is up to in his career. And that was the most prominent thing that I had to share with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that certainly, I ended up merging all of my email lists together, you know, for better or for worse. Cause I'm like, cause I found that like, there are people who in magic had no idea I wrote books. There are people who read my books who had no idea I did TV. And so it was like, I'm like, let me, instead of, there's a certainly advantage to addressing an individual audience. I'm like, no, let me just sort of put them in all into the world of Andrew Main.
Yeah. Well, and to be honest, I'm really wrestling with the idea of doing that.
Do it.
Specifically, the biggest example of that is when we were winding down frame rate, when Tom was no longer going to be at Twit, we made a big deal of like, hey, man, if you want to know what's next, sign up on this email. So it's like there's this list of, I want to say like 6,000 people or so who signed up, who really wanted to know what we're doing. And that's a weird like co-ownership thing where it's like before I could talk about, you know, certainly it made sense like, hey, new show's called Chord Killers, sign up over here, get the RSS feed and so on. But like when I had Hacking the System come out, I had to ask Tom, I'm like, hey, this is a shared resource. Would it be inappropriate for me to talk about my TV show on there? And it's sort of like, you know, the nuclear code where you need two people to pull the switch on that one. Which is a big pain in the butt, but the exciting thing about it, the other side of it, is that the open rate on that list is insane. Like a 60% open rate when we write something to those people because it's relevant and it happens so rarely.
Yeah, and that's certainly, there is something to segmenting, and I probably put together like another insider email list of people who just want to help promote and want to do stuff and things like that. I'll probably do something like that because there are certain things that, you know, like, all right, if you really like me and you listen to the podcast, you want to help me out, I'm going to talk to you differently than I'm going to. Somebody's like, yeah, I kind of like you, but all of a sudden you're ready to like be like, what a jerk, you know?
Yeah, you're talking about people who are interested in being your street team, basically, where yeah, it's just yeah. Like, you know, hey, if you care enough that you want to be an evangelist, the upside is, you know, we're going to chat and work together as a team. The downside is I'm going to ask you to invest some time and effort to help me promote this.
Well, part of it is also just that theory of mind of understanding who you're talking to, right? Like when, you know, tomorrow we're probably going to do another email blast just to remind people, hey, it's Cyber Monday. Look at all these deals. These deals are going on, man. These deals are crazy. And then I'll do another one to Kickstarter that will not be the same email. It will be a far more conversational email that will not only focus far more exclusively on the expansions, assuming that everybody there has already at least bought the base deck, and include our little Medium article, because there's probably a fair amount of people that back the Kickstarter that either find the story of how a Kickstarter continues once it's funded interesting, or do it themselves and would be very interested in kind of the hard numbers of it, just to either compare their experiences or to map out how they would do it going forward. So, you know, one of them is a sales email. Hey, we're selling a product. The other is, hey guys, remember you bought our thing? Just so you know, there's more stuff to buy if you want. And also, you want to hear about our journey? There you go. This is an informative thing. Because everyone that we know that we're going to talk to on Kickstarter, we want to make sure they feel very tied to us if we launch something else, you know? And I think it's just, that's just the relationship that we have compared to, you know, a Cyber Monday email, which I think everyone's going to get a million of them. And hopefully you click on all of them or just mine and Brian's.
Yeah. That's all that matters. Hey, man, do you guys have picks? I got a pick. I think I gave it before. I'm still reading Robert Cialdini's Persuasion. I'm halfway through it now. It's good
Brian,
stuff.
Brian, try to make me buy this book. Let's try some of this Persuasion.
Well, actually, one of the first tangible little benefits is...
Oh, I can't wait to find out. I'm going to buy it right now.
No, one of the first things they did was a... I'm going to mess up all these statistics, but they had a team who just was trying to get people to fill out surveys at the mall about, like, what's your opinion about stuff at the mall. And so they had them go out and they found that like 29% of people would actually take a survey for whatever. And so then they had another team go out and they first asked, excuse me, I have a question. Do you consider yourself somebody who helps other people? Or helps other people in the community. So that brief moment of introspection of like, am I this kind of person or whatever, they would ask, and then they would say, oh, good, because we need some surveys to be filled out for whatever. So by having people self-identify and having that moment of reflection, they went to 77% of people in that curated state were willing to fill out the survey on there. So... anyway, it's filled with really clever stuff like that. Robert Cialdini writes really, really good stuff.
Yeah, I remember reading about that somewhere. I wonder if that was actually an influence, but that certainly the idea of when you get somebody to verbally declare a version of themselves, and then you give them the opportunity to live up to it.
You know, that's right.
Like,
that's right.
Once are you a liar?
No. Oh, good. Well, then take this truth test. And it's like, well, okay.
Yeah, and it's framing. Framing is a powerful, powerful tool.
My pick is going to be, I think I picked MailChimp last week. On that tip, I will pick Kickstarter this week because it is on my mind now, thinking about how we re-engage with our audience and what they want to see. Kickstarter is the best. You know, it is certainly something that I think can make dreams come true and also anxiety inducing nightmares if you don't wield its power carefully. So
you're not kidding.
Kickstarter.
In the spirit of those broad picks, the internet. I'm going to pick the internet, guys. The internet's my pick. The whole internet. Useful.
Hey, man.
I mean, mine was far more of a cop out than Brian's. Brian was a book. You know, it's a normal. Oh, look, it's the internet.
Yeah. World Wide Web Consortium.
I use Facebook less and less. I did a Facebook Live yesterday, but I just don't.
I really wonder. Facebook is putting so much marketing into their live. I really wonder how much it's paying off because I don't feel like I've seen a lot more from people that weren't already doing it.
Well, the problem is that they have to sell the proposition of not only should you go live on Facebook, but you should not go live on Periscope, on Twitch, on YouTube, on whatever.
The only reason I didn't go live on Periscope was I did a Periscope stream earlier in the week and the chat thing wasn't working.
Really?
And I'm like, oh, I can't talk to anybody while it stopped working in the middle of it. I'm like,
well, and that latency matters. Like, at least Periscope is pretty short latency, right? It's only like 3 or 4 seconds.
Yeah, it's generally pretty short.
Yeah. I think people are realizing the importance of that. I know that Twitch realizes the importance of it because, like, if you're of a certain caliber.
If you're a turbo member, I think you can beta test their quicker thing.
Basically, if you have an audience, they'll make sure that it's low latency. Apropos of nothing, the Modern Rogue is, for some reason this weekend, the YouTube algorithm is smiling upon the Modern Rogue.
Hey!
I think it's because we had a longer episode on Friday, where we learned how to make Pruno, aka prison wine, that can kill you with botulism. But I know that and I mentioned this before, there's this great deconstruction of the YouTube algorithm, and it seems to be like watch time is hugely, hugely important. Earlier this year, they started making watch time the default metric instead of views, because views is somebody could start it, watch 3 seconds, and shut it off, whereas watch time shows real engagement. So weirdly, having longer content seems to matter for the algorithm to serve that up later, and I don't know if I don't know, we're almost a year into the Modern Rogue experiment, and hopefully we're at a place where we're finally in a place to, you know, I don't know, have YouTube smile upon us.
Dude, it is well deserved. You guys are doing such great stuff there. One last thing. So Brian gave me a great idea about a week ago. Said, hey, listen, I've been doing all this. I think sometimes Brian just calls me so we can field test his marketing ideas and just get guide himself into conversations where he's testing things. Cause like I heard the whole like, hey, you got to solve everybody's problems. So here, you should do a thing for the contender and you solve everybody's problems. And I'm like, man, that's great. And then like 4 days later, Brian's like, anyway, we're going to solve your problems at scamstuff.com. but it was a great idea because we're sitting on nothing but stock here of the contender decks that we could just put out to our most hardcore people. A little bundle of way underpriced contenders. So you could just give them out for your Secret Santas, your boss's, you know, son's, you know, birthday that happens at Christmas, all the white elephant gift exchanges, all that stuff, right? And we send it out to like statistically the people who have bought the most on our site. It's three decks. For $40, and that's including shipping. And so far, we've sold 9 of them, which is really rad. But if you would like that, I figure if you've gotten to the end of After Things, if you've gotten to the end of it, then you can just email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. I'll give you the link, and you can buy it. It's nowhere on the site. So like the mini expansion mega pack, all that, that's a whole different thing. This is just three decks. In an express priority mail box, and you can give them away, use them as presents, you know, whatever. They're the hell out of our warehouse, which is nice. So yeah, if you've gotten to the end of this, then I feel like you're in the club enough where you deserve the discount. So just send me an email, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com.
Dude, that's awesome. Something with a retail price of $30, you can get 3 of them for $40, and then you look like a badass.
Yeah. Especially if you like the game, then you can send it around.
Heck yes.
Gentlemen, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.